Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you today from the Commercial News. I have the weekend edition, so for Saturday, February 21st, and Sunday, February 22nd. Have you been watching the Olympics? Wow, I sure know I have. It's been crazy. Today's the last day as I read this to you, and I'm sitting here and I can hear the men's hockey game in my head, so I will tell you, you probably know the outcome to that one before I do. Let's get started today on the front page. We'll start with local news. VSCA fan loses lawsuit. Union leader awarded his job and back pay, and this is a staff report. The United Food and Commercial Workers International Union, the UFCW, won the wrongful termination lawsuit of one of its employees on Tuesday. The lawsuit against VSCA fan concerned the termination of union leader Tim Miller, who was fired in 2023. In May of 2025, VSCA fan said they were withdrawing union recognition from the UFCW, which Miller was involved with, and in doing so cost workers their union health insurance in June of that year. The union said in a release that workers were given less than 2 weeks' notice. The UFCW filed a grievance and unfair labor practice charges with the National Labor Relations Board for the union withdrawal. And they claimed VSCA fan participated in anti-union tactics of pressuring people into not supporting their union have persisted for years, and the company resorted to extreme measures that violate workers' federally protected labor rights. Miller was granted back his job with back pay, but the company refused to comply with the decision, leading to a federal lawsuit. Tracy Bartak, UFCW Local 700 president, released a statement following the win. Tim Miller was terminated for simply serving on his union's executive board, has his job back with back pay, Bartak said. VSCA fan could have followed the arbitrator's decision as required by law, but instead they fought it tooth and nail, just as they've been fighting their unionized workers for years. This is a major victory for Tim and all VSCA fan workers in Danville who've been subjected to their employer's scorched earth anti-union campaign. During a town hall in August of 2025, Miller spoke out against VSCA fan. I've never seen a company deny an arbitration award like this, Miller stated, and I'm the only one whose case they've taken this far. To me, it's clear they went after me because of my position as a union leader and my role in standing up for my coworkers. In more front page local news, Fair Queen Gives Back to Community by Christy Jankowski. Dateline Georgetown. Life as a Fair Queen helps one Georgetown girl get back to her roots. I think this has brought me closer to my Illinois agricultural roots, Jordan Flores said. I've always been involved in agriculture, but coming and doing the pageant system and getting to know everybody else, it has definitely made me want to stay in Illinois. She says originally she'd planned to go to college in Miami, but is now staying close to home. So I can stay closer to not only my Illinois roots, but also stay closer to the pageant system that has really helped me develop as a teenager, she added. And even though Flores is busy with multiple interviews and appearances as the queen, she's currently a dual-enrolled high school student. She's currently majoring in biology at Danville Area Community College, where she will receive her associate's degree at the same time as she receives her high school diploma from Georgetown Ridge Farm High School. Her desire to pursue biology comes from her desire to work in pediatric oncology after a friend was diagnosed with cancer in 2020. I had a set of twins I was dancing with, and their younger sister, Erin Cox, was diagnosed with osteosarcoma in her right leg, Juarez said. I just remember being able to be that friend for this set of twins to lean on, and not only them to lean on, but also their family to come and talk to, or just getting to experience what they were going through an outside perspective, was really something special. And it really just connected something in my heart, and I knew I wanted to do something with oncology. Flores earned her royalty title last summer competing against other women in Vermilion County. Her father, Sam Flores, is a firefighter with the Georgetown Fire Department. So naturally, the Queen helps out with their annual pancake and sausage breakfast, which took place on February 14th. The Fair Queen always helps, but I've always helped since I was really little because my dad is also on the fire department, Flores said. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of people come in. We had over 7,000 kids and adults come in all together. Being involved with pageants has set Flores up for success. I've really just completely evolved as a teenager, and most people my age couldn't hold a conversation and be able to interview professionally, Flores said, crediting her parents and her director, Karen Thornsborough. I think they've just given me the best set of cards I could ever be dealt with, yeah, and they've helped me every single step. And that's something that I really, really love about the Georgetown Fair pageant system. They encourage you to prep and prep and prep, and they will always help you. So I just enjoy the family aspect of it, but also being able to have a coach when you need to go and ask questions too. You can do that. Flores's coach said she couldn't be prouder of how far Jordan has come. And as she volunteers, she gets to learn more about the communities and about what goes on. And so through all of those things, that makes her present, Thurisberg said about directing Flores. It's amazing to see them from the time they begin to the end of the year that next year, because they grow so much as a person. Flores says she encourages anyone interested in pageants to come check up their upcoming workshop, Crowned in Confidence. I did the workshop last year, Flores said, and I love the workshop. It was so much fun getting to talk to the past queen, getting to talk to the directors, and just getting to know what I was getting myself into. The workshop date is Saturday, April 18th. It's open to those between the ages of 16 and 21. And to sign up, head on over to the Georgetown Fair Queen Facebook page. The cost is $20 for the one-day camp. Our final story on the front page today, City to Address Road Blockage Issues Near Sigma. Again, by reporter Christy Jankowski. Dateline Danville. Council members and the Danville Police Chief discussed a section of road that can routinely gets clogged with semis on Tuesday. Community member Diane Schultz spoke about the situation, where she says semis block her ability to get to her home. She said it's near the Sigma Network facility, which is located off of Southgate Drive. Unfortunately, what happens on a very routine basis is that the semi trucks park in the southbound lanes of County Road 2100 East, and they completely block the southbound lanes, and they do that for a number of hours, Schultz said. Schultz said they park there to sleep, and it has caused issues with her being able to get home. I routinely would take the Lynch Road exit, go south, and then go to that by that facility to go home, so I'm blocked from getting home, Schultz added. Additionally, one evening, I pulled up thinking that the truck in front of me in the northbound lane would turn into the facility quickly, and they didn't. And another semi pulled behind me and completely blocked me in there. This has been going on here for a number of years. Alderwoman Tricia Teague said this has been a concern of hers and Danville Police Chief Christopher Yates for some time. I know that Chief Yates did take action on multiple occasions to resolve this, and we thought it was resolved, but obviously it's not complete, or it's back, Teague said. Chief Yates addressed the issue during council and called it a maintenance issue. I have the belief that many of these drivers are the same drivers, that this is within a regular route, Yates said. We take enforcement action. It clears up for a bit. It's just a constant maintenance that we have to maintain while the conversation. Teague is concerned, though, about the issue and how it can impact someone in an emergency situation. There have already been instances where emergency responders couldn't get through because the road has been blocked, Teague said. So it's not just speculation that there could be an instance. That has already occurred. And so it's definitely an issue worth resolving. Last fall, when she actually contacted me, I was in regular communication with Chief Yates on this issue, and it went on for quite some time, and I know Chief Yates did take action to resolve this. Alderman Doug Ahrens agreed with Teague and said that this issue has been ongoing for a while. This dance has been going on for 15-plus years, Ahrens said, and I can attest we've put up signs two or three times. Aaron suggested maybe having the city engineers take a gander at the ordeal. He added that there are typically 10 to 15 trucks in the area, and there is space in the staging area for others to be able to get through safely. Turning to some community events to look forward to, Fisher Theater to host Danville's Got Talent show. This is a staff report. Finals for Danville's Got Talent, Battle for the Best, is set for 6 p.m. on Friday, March 6th at the historic Fisher Theater. Tickets for the event are on sale now, and the cost is $5 a person plus a $2 processing fee. Two nights of auditions were held on January 14th and 15th, and a panel of judges narrowed the pool of performers down to 9 acts. This group will take the stage for the first time in this new high-stakes format. This year, the competition begins with a new twist, battle rounds. The 9 performers have been paired into 4 battle groups, where they will go head-to-head in the first half of the show. The judges will select 4 performers to advance to the solo rounds. After an intermission, the solo rounds will not only feature the 4 winners from the battle rounds, but also 4 returning champions from past Danville's Got Talent shows. This group will attempt to defend their titles in a showdown between fresh faces and proven winners. Questions or comments, contact Community Relations Coordinator Lindsay France by email at lfrance@cityofdanville.org. And for more information regarding Danville's Got Talent and more upcoming events, please visit our website at www.cityofdanville.org. Anyone who's interested in running for the general election in 2026 will be interested in this next article. Petition packets are available for the 2026 general election. Petition packets for independent and new political party candidates who wish to run for local offices in the general election on November 3rd are available at the Vermilion County Clerk's Office. According to a release from Robin Heffron, Vermilion County Clerk, packets can be picked up between 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, beginning on Wednesday, February 25th. The first day that petitions for new political party candidates and independent candidates may be circulated is Wednesday, February 25th. Petitions must be filed with the Vermilion County Clerk beginning Monday, May 18th at 8 a.m. through Tuesday, May 26th at 5 p.m. Local office to be elected on Tuesday, November 3rd, general election include the county clerk, county treasurer, supervisor of assessments, the county sheriff, the regional superintendent of schools, the board of review members, and county board members. Federal, state, and judicial offices will also be on the ballot. For more information and the necessary forms for those offices can be found at the State Board of Elections website at www.elections.il.gov. In other city news, city yard waste stickers are now available. The City of Danville Public Works Yard Waste Division announces that 2026 yard waste stickers are available for purchase now. Stickers are priced at $40 each and may be purchased in person or by phone, debit or credit card accepted. Processing fees may apply. At the City of Danville Public Works and the Robert E. Jones Municipal Building. Please note that only city-approved containers displaying a valid 2026 yard waste sticker will be collected during designated toter-only collection periods. A collection schedule and brochure outlining program guidelines will be provided with each sticker purchase. Yard waste collection for the 2026 season will begin in late March. For additional information, including detailed collection schedules and program requirements, please visit the City of Danville website at www.cityofdanville.org or contact the Public Works Department at 217-431-228, but that is not a correct number. I apologize. It is misprinted. So I will direct you to phone your Public Works Department, but you will need to take a look at that phone number. Well, for those of you that are readers, this is kind of interesting. I know that you may prefer an audiobook, but there's an article by Christy Jankowski headlined, "Journalist Discusses Serial Killer Books." Dateline St. Joe. Attempting to solve cold cases even into his retirement is the goal of award-winning journalist Bob Cyphers. On Monday night at the St. Joe Swearingen Memorial Library, Cyphers will be there to discuss cold cases in the Midwest in two of his books about the I-70 serial killer. The program is set for 6 p.m. Librarian Susan McKinney said she was contacted by Cyphers to host the event in the hopes of jarring someone's memory. "He's basically traveling around trying to reach as many people as he can," McKinney said. "What he said to me is ultimately he hopes that maybe doing one of these talks, somebody will hear something and that will jar their memory." According to a library clerk, Abigail Orwick, one case dates to 2008. Two men were murdered at a farmhouse with no evidence found, Orwick said. A year before, one of the men was attacked at a nearby farmhouse, tied up with two others, and their vehicles were stolen. The case, reported by various media throughout central Illinois, is a double murder of Mark Press and Ryan Riddle on January 28, 2008. Orwick said she's read Cypher's book, 25 Frozen, 1 Thawed, Murder and Mayhem in the Midwest, which McKinney confirmed during the interview is completely checked out. "Any way that the library can help bring resolution to these situations," McKinney said, "part of being a library is bringing people together in different situations to help them deal with issues or resolve issues. I mean, that's part of being a community library." The books he'll be discussing are Dead End, Inside the Hunt for the I-70 Serial Killer, and Midwest Cold Cases, 25 Frozen, 1 Thawed, Murder and Mayhem in the Midwest. There will be copies of the books for purchase at the program as well. The media was also provided with a snippet of his book, Dead End. Very interesting. An evening with the journalist on murder mysteries. If you can make it, I bet it'd be a good one. Well, we do have an article today that has some national impact that may be of interest to you. This is brought to us from Lindsay Whitehurst at the Associated Press, and her headline is "Supreme Court Strikes Down Trump's Sweeping Tariffs." Dateline Washington. The Supreme Court struck down President Donald Trump's far-reaching global tariffs on Friday, handing him a stinging loss that sparked a furious attack on the court he helped shape. Trump said he was absolutely ashamed of some justices who ruled 6-3 against him, calling them disloyal to our Constitution and lapdogs. At one point, he even raised the specter of foreign influence without citing any evidence. The decision could have ripple effects on economies around the globe after Trump's moves to remake post-World War II trading alliances by wielding tariffs as a weapon. But an unvowed Trump pledged to impose a new global 10% tariff under a law that's restricted to 150 days and has never been used to apply tariffs before. Their decision is incorrect, he said, but it doesn't matter because we have very powerful alternatives. The court's ruling found tariffs that Trump imposed under an emergency powers law were unconstitutional, including the sweeping reciprocal tariffs he levied on nearly every other country. Trump appointed three of the justices on the nation's highest court during his first term and has scored a series of short-term wins that have allowed him to move ahead with key policies. Tariffs, though, were the first major piece of Trump's broad agenda to come squarely before the Supreme Court for a final ruling after lower courts had also sided against the president. The majority found that it is unconstitutional for the president to unilaterally set and change tariffs because taxation power clearly belongs to Congress. The farmers did not vest any part of the taxing power in the executive branch, Chief Justice John Roberts wrote. Justices Brett Kavanaugh, Samuel Alito, and Clarence Thomas dissented. The tariffs at issue here may or may not be wise policy, but as a matter of tax history and precedent, they are clearly lawful, Kavanaugh wrote. Trump praised his 63-page dissent as genius. The court majority did not address whether businesses could get refunded for the billions they have collectively paid in tariffs. Many companies, including the big box warehouse chain Costco, have already lined up in lower courts to demand refunds. Kavanaugh noted the process could be complicated. The court says nothing today about whether, and if so, how, the government should go about returning the billions of dollars that it's collected from importers. But that process is likely to be a mess, as was acknowledged in oral argument, he wrote. The Treasury had collected more than $133 billion from the import taxes the president has imposed under the Emergency Powers Law as of December, federal data shows. We're a little past our halfway point together, and I will stop and we'll take a look at the death notices that were received by Friday at 5 p.m. We have two this week. Carolyn Neild, 85, from Georgetown, passed away on February 19th at the Waters of Covington. A visitation will be held on February 23rd from 5 to 7 p.m. at Sunset Funeral Home Houghton Leisure, located at 200 East West Street in Georgetown. Her funeral service will take place the following day, February 24th at 10 a.m., also at the same location. Thelma Walters. Thelma Elizabeth Milliken Walters went to her home in heaven on February 18th. A celebration of Thelma's life will be held on Friday, February 27th at New Song Worship Center at 4719 North Elm Street in Cayuga, Indiana at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Pastor Brad Porter will officiate and burial will follow at Silver Island Cemetery. Family will receive guests from 10:30 to 11:30 at the church prior to the celebration. And that concludes the reading of our death notices for this week. Well, let's take some time, and before we get into sports today, I do want to reach back to the Irish Hiker. We do have a features article that may be of interest. And this does kind of go along with our obituaries. This is an article written by Kevin Cullen, the Irish Hiker, and his headline is, Lee Dedicated Her Life to Justice for David. Like every other newspaper reporter, I've met a lot of inspiring people along the way. One of them was Catherine Kitty Lee, who died February 8th at age 85. Her obituary read in part, the death of her son, David Grindstaff, in 1975 affected Catherine for the rest of her life. She was always thankful for the love and support shown to David and the family by the community. David was every mom's dream. Handsome, kind, great student, Boy Scout, part-time gas station attendant. On August 21st, 1975, two men robbed Bob's Shell Station at 859 East Main Street. James Albert Dumas, a heroin addict out on parole, shot and killed the 15-year-old boy. The robbers stole $25. Dumas, found guilty of murder and armed robbery, was sentenced to 100 to 150 years in prison, and although the facts of the case never changed, he came up for parole in 1983, then again and again and again and again and again, 24 times in all. Kitty Lee feared that if she stopped appearing at parole hearings in person, launching letter writing campaigns and circulating petitions, the man who murdered her boy in cold blood would walk free. She was forced over and over to relive the tragedy, to keep the story alive and see that justice was served. I met Kitty in the early 1980s. With her help, the Commercial News ran a feature story about her life since the murder. For many years after that, she contacted me for follow-up stories as new hearings were scheduled, new petitions were circulated, and new protest letters were sought. Kitty did not seek revenge, only justice. When it came to David, she was a tigress, a lioness, a mama grizzly defending her cub. Talking to her, you felt that too, that you knew David. You came to feel her profound loss and appreciate the shadow that his senseless death cast over her life. Through the years, 24 petitions were sent to the parole board, signed by thousands of Danville area people. Kitty appeared in person at hearings conducted at prisons where Dumas lived. She was interviewed by newspaper, radio, and TV reporters. All that was emotionally grueling and potentially dangerous. Convicted murderers have friends and families too, and some of them were not above seeking revenge. Parole board policy states that the release of victim protest letters could subject a person to actual risk of physical harm. And under Illinois law, victim statements are confidential and privileged. Her activism benefited the families of other victims. Working with former state representative Bill Black, a representative from Danville, Kitty helped change the law as it applied to parole board hearings. Instead of routine annual reviews, the board could decide not to review a case for 3 years. That often gave the families of victims a much needed break. Finally, in 2020, with Kitty in failing health, Dumas was granted parole. That year, for the first time, he admitted that he was involved in the crime. Even then, he did not identify his accomplice, claiming that he had met him at a baseball game and never knew his name. At that hearing, his lawyers said that his release was long overdue. They claimed that he was a trouble-free inmate who had found Jesus, abandoned illegal drugs, and posed no threat to society. He was 77 years old. He'd been in prison for 45 years. A petition signed by 494 people favored his release, but one with 1,664 signatures urged the board to keep him behind bars. He was released on an 11-2 vote. Kitty Lee, back in Danville, said that she was at peace with the decision. To the end, she thanked the many people who had joined her and her family in the long, hard fight. Their love and support were precious to her and to David. Well, it's time to turn our attention to sports. Let's take a look first at our local roundup, brought to us by Marvin Holman. Local wrestlers hang tough in state. This is Dateline Champaign. While only three local wrestlers are still in the mix for state titles, other wrestlers are still alive at the IHSA wrestling meet. Hoopston area's Aiden Bell at 126 and Oakwood Salt Forks Weston Frazier 120 and Devin Ayler at 138 were wrestling in semifinal action on Friday night. If they win, they'll advance to the state finals at 6:30 p.m. on Saturday evening. In Class 1A, OSF Stephen Uden at 113, Mason Schwartz 132, and Tyler Huschel at 144 are still alive in the consolation round. Uden lost in Thursday's quarterfinals, but was able to beat St. Joe Ogden's Ben Wells 15-7 to move on, while Schwartz also rebounded from a quarterfinal loss to beat Cole City's Cooper Morris 3-1, and Huschel lost in the first round and rebounded to win in the first round of consolation and beat Gibson City Melvin Sibley's Nolan Lowe 7-3 in the second round. OSF's Pedro Rangel V at 126 won in the first round of consolation with a 7-3 win over Maddox Steele of Canton, but lost 12-3 to Richmond Burton's Leland Nelson. Westville's Ethan Miller at 190 rebounded from a first round loss by beating Knoxville's James Long by technical fall and then beat Murphy Burroughs' Logan Tanner 4-2. In Class 2A, Danville's Josiah Williams at 175 rebounded with a first-round loss by getting a 13-4 major decision over Grays Lake Central's William Lyle. But in the second round, Williams was pinned by Morton Colton of McKee. In prep girls basketball action, St. Joe beat BHRA 52-40. In men's college basketball, it was DAC 96, ICC 86. The Jaguars were able to hold off the Cougars at home on Wednesday. Blake Reed had 19 points for Daniel Area Community College, while Jeremy Wilson had 17 points and 10 rebounds. Jordan Dixon had 17 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 assists. Deshaun Clark had 11 points. Cam Sweetnam and Jeremiah Panaches each had 8, and Denzel Antoue had 6 points and 7 blocks. Illinois Central College had a familiar face return home as Danville High product, Juwan Robinson had 16 points with 10 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals for the Cougars. In women's college basketball, it was ICC 81 and DAC 41. In more sports, Storm sails to third straight title. Salt Fork gets past Georgetown Ridge Farm, and this comes to us from reporter Marvin Holman. Dateline Broadlands. The Salt Fork girls basketball team was gunning for its third straight IHSA Class 1A regional title on Thursday, but the third straight title that the Storm earned was arguably the toughest. The Storm battled with Georgetown Ridge Farm for most of the second half before Sailor Packett put in the winning basket with seconds left to give Salt Fork a 24-23 win at Heritage High School. You have to tip your hat to Georgetown. They played well, but you have to give us a little more credit because we found a way to win and the girls found a way, Russell said. Sometimes the situation is such that you just have to find a way, and that's what we did. Packett's shot ended a fourth quarter that saw the Buffaloes battle to get the lead after being down for all of the game. It was an adrenaline rush, and it was coming off a timeout, Packett said. We had a play, we ran it, I found some spacing, and I was able to get in there. That was a tough shot, Georgetown Ridge Farm coach Brad Russell said. It was not an easy shot that Packett hit, and I gave her all the respect for being able to hit the shot. We went into offense after that. We had a drive that we liked, and we couldn't ask for anything more. The Buffaloes did have time to get their own winning basket, but could not get the shot in. Brycey Hurd got the rebound and was flagrantly fouled with 0.5 seconds left. While she missed the 2 free throws, the Storm had the ball, and all they had to do was inbound the ball to clinch the win. While Brian and Brad Russell have coached against each other before, getting a shot at the regional title brings a new wrinkle on Thursday. Anytime that you put hardware in a game, that's going to heighten the intensity, Brian Russell said. Both teams played hard, and it went back and forth, and we were fortunate to make the last play. Our girls tonight talk like, about why not us, Brad Russell said. We're the 5 seed, and they are the 1, and there is a little bit of pressure on them. With the 1 seed, you have to take care of business, and they did that. I think both teams played as hard as they could. Well, for you Chicago Bears fans, I know that it's been a long time in conversation about the need for a new stadium and the desire for a new stadium. And there have been various places suggested. Well, here's one. Here's the newest. Hammond is Indiana's option for the Bears. This comes to us from Luke Shepard. In 1921, the Bears moved from Decatur to the city of Chicago. Now, over 100 years later, Indiana has legislation that would establish authority to build a stadium for the Bears in northwestern Indiana. Senate Bill 27 has reached its second reading in the House, and with little adversity getting through the Senate, it is likely the bill will pass through the House before the end of the next session next week. It establishes the Northwest Stadium Authority with the purpose of bringing the Bears to Indiana. The Bears have played at Soldier Field in Chicago since 1971, and the stadium was built in 1924, making it the oldest stadium in the NFL today. The team is coming off one of its best seasons in recent memory, going 11-6 and coming up just short in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. At around 9 a.m. Eastern on Thursday, Governor Mike Braun posted a statement on X showing his support for Senate Bill 27 and the entire idea of the Bears coming to Indiana. Indiana is open for business, and our pro-growth environment continues to attract major opportunities like this partnership with the Chicago Bears. We've identified a promising site near Wolf Lake in Hammond and established a broad framework for negotiating a final deal, he wrote. If approved, the proposed statement amendment to Senate Bill 27 puts forward the essential framework to complete this agreement contingent upon site due diligence proceeding smoothly. The state of Indiana moves at the speed of business, and we've demonstrated that through our quick coordination between state agencies, local government, and the legislature to set the stage for a huge win for all Hoosiers. We have built a strong relationship with the Bears organization that will serve as the foundation for a public-private partnership leading to the construction of a world-class stadium and a win for taxpayers. Shortly after Braun's post, the Bears released a statement of their own, which posted by NFL insider Ian Rappaport on X. The passage of Senate Bill 27 would mark the most meaningful step forward in our stadium planning efforts to date, it said. We're committed to finishing the remaining site-specific necessary due diligence to support our vision to build a world-class stadium near the Wolf Lake area in Hammond, Indiana. We appreciate the leadership shown by Governor Braun, Speaker Houston, and members of the Indiana General Assembly. We value our partnership and look forward to continuing to build a working relationship together. Wow, the Bears in Indiana. That seems weird to me. but we'll see how this develops. Well, we're at the end of our time together. A quick look at our weather. It looks like it's going to be pre-spring-like. It looks like from some rain on Saturday, on Wednesday, I'm sorry. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News. I look forward to reading again with you soon.